Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Welcome to Alonement. I'm Francesca Spector, a journalist, author, and host of this podcast. Each week, I interview people that I'm interested in, all about their time alone and what it means to them.
It isn't enough to say that you can know yourself by being alone, because there are ways of being alone that below the surface are actually ways of not being with yourself.
You can feel lonely in a room full of people, and you can feel so content completely on your own.
Whatever your age, life stage, or relationship status, we can all enjoy a bit of time by ourselves. And on this show, we discover wisdom and personal stories about how to do that. Because when alone time isn't lonely, it's alonement.
People who are able to feel seen and understood, feel enough within themselves when they're alone, are so capable of giving that to others.
A lot of the cultural discussion that we have tends to be about the adjustments that introverts need to make in order to thrive in our extroverted world. But I think it really goes both ways. I think that all of us need to learn to make adjustments, you know, to find a greater sense of balance.
Leslie Stevens, my guest this week, is the writer behind Morning Person, a top 10 Substack newsletter that chronicles her life in Portland, Oregon. In August last year, shortly after her 30th birthday, Leslie announced to her readers that she was separating from her husband. Over the past 18 months, she's chronicled her journey of living by herself for the first time, including her recent solo house purchase, which we chat about in this episode. She also shares her advice as a former food and lifestyle editor of establishing a home by yourself and, crucially, for yourself, rather than designing around the absence of someone else. Whether or not you're already familiar with Leslie's work, this conversation is full of gems for any kind of solo living. I hope you get as much from it as I did. Before we get to the episode, I want to thank our season sponsor, Sensate. Have you always loved the idea of meditation, but never quite got on with the practice? Sensate, a palm-sized infrasonic stress and anti-anxiety device, is the friend that you need. I've been practicing things like breathwork and meditation for 2 years, but integrating this little device into my daily sessions, which syncs up your choice of relaxing soundscapes from the Companion app, has helped me discover a new kind of deep relaxation. There are lots of tracks to choose from, including nature sounds for stress relief and soothing sleep rhythms. Visit getsensate.com/alonement for 10% off your first device. I'll also pop that link in the show notes. Leslie Stevens, it's so great to have you on Alonement. How are you doing today?
I'm so excited to talk to you. I can't believe that it's been almost exactly a year since we last spoke and so much has happened.
It's so fantastic. I'm glad that we have, at least with our platforms, we have an annual pretext for a catch up. But God, I mean, honestly, every time I open your newsletter, I look at Portland and I look at your fantastic life and your hiking and your beautiful home. And I think I need to make the next annual catch up in person.
You're welcome to visit anytime. I have a guest room now, so please come join.
Oh, Well, and I'm so enjoying all of your recent house content at the moment, because for those who, well, the small minority of the internet at this point that don't follow your brilliant Substack newsletter, Morning Person, you recently bought a house all by yourself. To begin with, congratulations. What's been your greatest learning so far about a home for one?
The learning curve has been so high. I mean, so I only started living alone for the first time a year ago, and I'm sure that we'll go into this, but I lived with a partner for 10 years. So I moved into an apartment a year ago, and buying this home has been my first experience of really having ownership of something completely on my own. And so every single part of it has been a learning curve. It's like how to tend to a home, how to take care of it, the right people to hire, how to design it myself. There's also a lot of freedom that comes with that, where I don't have to be checking in with somebody else about the decisions I make, but there's also a lot of terror to do everything on my own.
Yeah, it's quite hard, isn't it, when you're making these big decisions and you almost think, am I allowed to make this big decision by myself? But I mean,
constantly.
What do you think is the result? I mean, do you think it's almost, I don't know, like, how do you think it comes out in the design, for instance, when you're designing as one?
I mean, I will say one of the fun things is that it just feels so like me, and it's such an expression of my style. I mean, even looking at my bookshelf, it gives me so much joy because it's all my books on my bookshelf. So it just feels like this complete expression of me in my home. And it really feels like my own space. But at the same time, I'm constantly making errors because I don't have anybody else to double check me. And I have strengths in certain areas. Like I'm really great at picking out a fabric or sort of conceptually understanding a room, but I'm really terrible at measuring. So I actually just had this experience where I bought a couch and it was far larger than I expected it to be. And this is something that might not have happened in the past because I could have probably double checked with someone and said, does this feel too big to you? Or does this feel like the right size? And so I received it and was like, okay, I need to find a new solution for this. So it's so fun and wonderful. And also like I'm prone to mistakes because it's just me. There's no checks and balances really.
That's so funny that you mentioned the sofa thing, because I did, if this makes you feel any better, when I first moved into this flat, 5 years ago, that was also post a breakup. So that was that same feeling of, oh, can I do this alone? And I did the same thing. So I bought a sofa. It was an L-shaped sofa, and technically it did fit into the flat. So that wasn't the issue. I guess I was sort of thinking in quite a literal way, but in terms of the flow of the room, you know, it was quite a small space. It stopped you sort of walking through. And it's just, I think it's really hard. And I think I wonder, because I know from couple friends when I'll speak to them, and my best friend and her husband actually just did exactly the same thing. But because the two of them, it's sort of a shared mistake. But I don't know. I wonder if we scapegoats doing these things alone when actually they're just sort of, you know, first time furniture things.
That is a hilarious point that there's nobody to blame except for myself. In a partnership, you can sometimes go, oh, you measured this wrong, or you did something else, and blame your own errors on somebody else, at least to scapegoat. But like, it was me and my fault alone entirely. I will say that it ended up working out, but I did the exact same thing where I measured an L couch and I was like, it technically fits. And then it entered into the room and I was like, this is completely wrong. But, you know, you figure it out.
Yeah, you do. And I think it's, I don't know, it's a journey.
It is a journey.
So you've moved a couple of times now. So as you speak about very honestly on Morning Person, and I think in a way that so many people appreciate, you were divorced at a fairly young age. And I think it was just before you were 30 or just after you were 30?
Just after I turned 30.
Just after. Yeah. And you lived with a partner with your ex-husband before that. Was that process different in terms of, I don't know, even the way that you're designing things? One thing I did wonder is whether when you're compromising on things, you end up in a slightly more neutral space of design and you know, kind of putting a home together compared to when it's a sort of what I like to call like a tyranny of one, when you get to be the tyrant of your own environment.
Yeah, it's so interesting. And I think that that was such a beautiful way of putting it, sort of this neutrality that comes because of so many compromises when you're designing with a partner. And I will say one of the interesting things about my relationship with my ex-husband is that we really came into adulthood together. So we were almost creating our sense of style at the exact same time, because we met when we were 19 and we moved in together immediately after college at 22, and we lived together until we were 30. So it was almost like we were figuring out our design at the same time. And so I didn't even really know what my sense of style was. Like, we were just sort of figuring it out together. And it was a lot of trial and error through all the different apartments that we lived in. And we lived in, I think, over 8 or 9 places together. So it was constantly like reinventing and figuring out how we live together. And I will say one of the biggest differences in this space is that, A, I know I'm going to be here for a really long time, or I hope to be. And so I'm being really intentional with my decisions. But I'm also, to your point of neutrality, I'm a lot more bold with my decisions because I feel like there's nobody else who I'm taking into account. So when I want something that's, you know, kind of a bold piece, like I just bought this butter dish that I love, and it's the shape of like, oh, a naked woman lying down, and that's my butter keeper. But it's this kind of odd piece, but it feels like art, and it's so beautiful, and it called to me, and so I got it. And so there's a lot more touches like that where I just feel like, oh, this is just so uniquely me, and I'm drawn to this piece, and I'm just trying to center what I'm really interested in and what I find beauty in, instead of, yeah, this sort of like constant conversation of figuring out what our style is. And that might just be coming into adulthood and knowing myself a little bit better than I did at 22.
Yeah, so it's hard to separate, isn't it? Because you don't know what the alternate sort of lifestyle would have been. But I think it's interesting. And I think, I don't know, I remember doing something absolutely crazy, painting the inside of my toilet door bright pink during lockdown. And that just being something I could do without informing anyone. And even though, don't get me wrong, I look at it now and I think that was not the right shade. I should probably change that one day. It's nice to have, at this moment in time, have been able to do it and have been able to almost
completely
consciously make a mistake.
The mistakes are mine. And yeah, I feel like that's something that I'm so trying to disentangle from, the fact that like there are no rules. I think that I, in general, lived my 20s with so much structure and feeling like, okay, and that's why it's really hard to disentangle these things from my relationship versus just the way that I lived my life. It was like, this is how you do things. There's a certain set of rules that you're supposed to do. And coming into my 30s, I'm really understanding like, there are no rules. You can paint your bathroom door bright pink and nobody's going to come in and say, this is irresponsible. You have to have a white bathroom door. And so I'm also sort of like coming into that knowledge in this new space.
Do you find that you have a wealth of lifestyle content available to you as a sort of solo liver? Because, you know, I think traditionally when we think of a household, the term homemaking, it refers to sort of, you know, 50s housewife sashaying around creating a home for a family. Do you find that you have enough resources in terms of this journey that you're on right now?
In terms of the content that I'm sort of seeking out and looking towards?
Yes, I know that's complicated because obviously you're creating it as well, but I wonder sometimes if when you're creating it, you're also finding the resources, or if you're the person making it for the rest of us.
I mean, the short answer is no, I'm not finding it anywhere. And I think one of the really interesting things, and the reason that I've felt so moved, I write so vulnerably and so openly about my experience of my divorce and my separation. And I've had family members who are like, this feels really personal and like private information that you're just sort of sharing on the internet. But the reason that I feel so compelled to do this is the number of women who have emailed me directly or who have commented to say, this is my experience and I'm not seeing this anywhere, because so much of lifestyle media, first of all, it's very heterosexual. It's often people who are in long-term relationships. It's people who are following a very specific path of marriage and babies, and this is how your life is supposed to look. And so there are very few voices, I feel like, now who are really talking about there are other ways to live this gorgeous, curated, intentional life that might be completely independent of a partnership or a marriage. And so I do feel a large responsibility and joy in creating that content because, yeah, I'm not really seeing it anywhere.
I suspected you would say that. I mean, I know I sort of fed you that, but, you know, I for me, almost like from my vantage point, I'm also seeking out that content. I also live alone. Honestly, I think that, you know, Morning Person would be one of the first resources that I'd share with someone going on this journey for the first time because I don't see it many places. And even, I don't know, I came to, I think I'm just, well, I've just recently celebrated my sort of fifth anniversary of living alone. And something I find that I need to do periodically is to sort of, you know, make a few changes in the space. And I don't mean that in a big way. I mean that in a sort of, I recently put up a gallery wall and I was very proud of myself for kind of doing that. But one of the changes that I kind of felt the need to make recently was to almost downsize things so that they were more accommodating to living alone. Even, I don't know, I think I had this, you know, gigantic family-sized plate collection that I was, you know, I had like eight dinner plates. I'm like, why did I buy this set? You know, it's like I'm always, the only way I can describe it is almost always kind of being there for this, to host this dinner party or to, you know, to for this brood of all these, I don't know, all these children that were somehow going to come and then hosting. And it was just, I think part of it was just genuinely, you know, when you go out and you buy a dinner set, it will give you that many. But another part of it, I don't know, it almost felt like I was almost waiting for something. And I think because I hadn't been shown another way to be, so I'm so grateful for content like yours. Do you think there's also a, when you're going into designing your space, I mean, are you thinking differently in terms of how you're envisioning how that space is going to be used? Because obviously I got it wrong, but you know, when you said that you're doing everything very intentionally at the moment, when you look at rooms, what are you thinking? Obviously you're not imagining this huge brood at the moment. What kind of experiences are you imagining happening as your solo life unfolds?
You know, this is such an interesting question. There are so many different ways that I could take it. And I know that you just spoke to Ruby Warrington, who talks a lot about being child-free by choice. And it sort of looks like that's the direction that my life is going to go in. And so it really changes a lot of things, right? Like when I purchased my house with my ex-husband, it was with this expectation of having this brood of children and it being our starter home and which home will be the nursery. And it was constantly, we bought it with an eye to the future. It was not, what do I want right now? It was, what are we going to need within the next 5 years? And so when I purchased this home, one of the biggest changes was asking myself, what do I need right now? Because I don't know what the next 5 years are going to look like. I don't know if I'm going to be living with someone, if I'm going to be living alone, but all I can determine is what I'm doing right now. And so there's also been some freedom in that where it's like, I'm free to make choices based on how my life looks right now. And when I moved into this home, it was with a relatively clean slate because I was moving out of the home that I bought with my husband. And so he's still living in that home. And just by default, I got less of the furniture and less of the things. And I kind of chose to have less of the things because to me, they carried such an energy of this life that we were going to build. You know, like I didn't want to be sleeping in the bed that we bought and that we slept in on our wedding night. Like it just felt like it carried so much. And so I had, you know, it was more of a financial burden on my end, but it was also this opportunity to really build, what do I need right now? You know, and there have been these specific decisions, like I've made the decision to not buy a TV and to really arrange my living room so that there's never a place where a TV will go. And that's not to say that I don't watch TV, but when I watch TV, it's often alone and I'm like curled up in a little ball with my iPad. And that's how I prefer to watch TV. And so there are these million little decisions that you make that are like, no, this is what makes sense to me living solo. And yeah, so when I buy a mug, I'm buying one mug instead of, you know, six mugs. But it's been a completely different process to do that.
And I can imagine knowing the beautiful things, the objects and the very curated selection of things that you share in your newsletter, that's a very nice looking mug for one, right?
It is. And I wish that I had the mug because I actually did just buy a mug. This one I've had for like 9 years, but It's a beautiful mug. It's from my favorite coffee shop in LA in Echo Park where I used to live. So it's meaningful.
I adore that. It's not that, as you know, that six pack of mugs that sort of you think, oh, it doesn't matter if they get chipped, and you're sort of almost letting go of wanting nice things, which is a whole other consideration anyway. But I don't know about you. I think I just took after what my mother knew, and you know, thinking about my mother, she moved straight from her parents' house to living with my dad. So that was what you do with a first home sort of thing. There was no blueprint.
Completely. Yeah. And that's exactly what I did. And even, I mean, we could go down an entire rabbit hole in the ways that I felt like I was subconsciously emulating my parents' marriage and the way that they show up for each other in my own marriage. And, you know, they've been married for 30 plus years now and have a very beautiful and successful marriage. It just, the way that they've done things didn't work for me. But yeah, I constantly hear my mom's voice in my head, and she's even made so many design suggestions, and she's so excited about this home. And that's been so fun to sort of share with her. But ultimately it's like, oh, this is a new way of doing things. I don't have to do it the way that my parents did things. This is my home, which, yeah, I keep coming back to this idea of this like complete freedom, but also like, it's very scary to just go off and, yeah, and have this like wide open canvas.
That's lovely to think about you doing that with your mum. And it makes me think of how, I know that you've now been through both of these experiences, but it's one of those quite romanticized ideas that, you know, you'll plan with your mum for your wedding day and you'll go and get your dress and all of those things. I've never seen a precedent set in a movie or anything of you and your mum designing your first home alone. That seems, something about it seems counterintuitive, but that's just, I suppose, heteronormative content.
Completely. And also one of the things that I feel so strongly about now is that there needs to be divorce registries, not only wedding registries, because when I was getting married, I didn't need anything. Like, we had lived together for years, so we didn't sign up for a registry. And in fact, we didn't even really have a wedding because we got married over COVID. But now that I'm creating my home, I'm like, oh, it would be so nice to be able to even like have like a divorce shower or something like that. Like, I just feel like that's, if I have any girlfriends who do go through this, to be able to provide support in that way. But I will say that my relationship with my mom, what's really interesting is that we've always had a fairly tumultuous relationship. We're very similar, and so we really butt heads. I think we've always been very rigid in our way of doing things, but the fact that I just like completely exploded my life really opened up these conversations that we had never had about the choices that we've each made and the ways that we want to live our lives. And so we've had this beautiful opening of our relationship in a way that we haven't before, when we were just sort of fulfilling what felt more like a role instead of this new script that we're writing for, yeah, the mom coming over to help the divorced daughter sort of set up her new home.
Wow. That's really empowering to hear that you doing something which, you know, ostensibly is breaking the mold, going against the grain of what one, you know, expects their sort of life to work out as. That's actually something that's created a more authentic healing relationship with your mum, rather than sort of doing the path that, you know, you might have expected.
Completely. And also, I don't want to glaze over the fact, because I feel like I'm in this new space now, because it's been, my husband and I separated in August of last year, of 2022. And so that, I'm really like, it's only just now that I feel like I'm stepping into this new chapter. And so much of that past year was like so messy and so bad and so sad. And I guess what made me, you know, what reminded me of just sharing this is you saying, undoing these expectations for how you thought life would look. Like, that process of untangling those expectations took me a full year of grieving and getting through it. And so now I feel like I'm on the other side talking about this fabulous experience of having my new home. But there was like this really dark place that I had to get through in order to come to this side. But I'm so grateful that I did, because it feels so good over here.
Thank you for sharing that, because I think that, I don't know, I think it's really brave to tackle the gray, especially when you are someone who's, you're big on, well, you're quite big on social media. You're very big on Substack. Do you think it's almost having that medium of, you know, you're bigger on this newsletter platform than you are perhaps on Instagram. Do you think that maybe having that platform where you're able to write these long essays and explore the gray, you were able to sort of be more honest about that? Because I feel like I've been with you, and you're, you know, as one of your followers, I've come with you on that journey in a way I don't think I perhaps would have been able to simply on Instagram.
Completely. And I'm so much more drawn to the platform of Substack, and even Substack though, like there, I actually am in the process right now. And this is like, who knows what will happen, but I'm sort of putting all my thoughts and feelings around this into a nonfiction book and sort of writing almost a memoir style piece that maybe it will just be for me and for my processing. But there really is something, especially with Substack and with Morning Person newsletter, about being able to really write about what's happening, because Instagram is all about images and the spectacle, and it's all about showing really like a beautiful version of life. And even when we're showing images that are a little bit darker or are showing that gray, it feels still like a performance. And it's almost like showing, but in my Substack and in my writing and being able to write these weekly essays, which by the way, feel like my journals because I'm essentially processing what I'm going through every week, it just feels like the space of so much more authenticity and this ability to be really genuine and talk about and process what I'm thinking and feeling instead of saying like, oh, here's a photo of me, you know, doing.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
This thing today.
And it feels like that. It feels like that as a reader, not to sort of spend this whole podcast gushing, but just to sort of express that, because I'm really grateful to you for creating that content. And it feels like for me and for my audience, I'm not someone that has the same exact same background in food and lifestyle that you do. And I think that the things that you put out, as well as the honest essays, are the almost the lifestyle tips that then go along with that. You know, there's some sort of like practical, okay, this is where I'm at and this is how I'm sort of building and this is how I'm forging this solo life for myself. I wanted to ask about those smaller steps as well, because you've learned to navigate this life where you are. I think what one big thing you described was how your Sundays looked very different since you'd split up from your, you know, day-to-day. How have you learned to cope, and what's possibly your best advice for learning to cope with those, I suppose, like weekends and Sundays that look very, very different?
Yeah, it's been so much trial and error, because I mean, genuinely, before a year ago, I had never spent longer than 48 hours alone. A couple years ago, I actually realized that I hadn't ever in my entire life spent 24 hours alone. And so this idea of being alone and spending a Sunday by myself is this entirely new skill that I've really had to build. And honestly, our conversation that we had a year ago on Morning Person was fundamental to me, because it was sort of at this time where I was going through this grief and really understanding, like, what do I do on a Sunday when I wake up alone? Like, what do I do? And I've learned a couple of really practical tips for me. Like one thing is that it's really easy for me. I'm getting my master's right now in addictions counseling. And so a few days a week I'm going to school, but there are often days because I write morning person from home where I don't see anybody. And I learned that those days that I can't go 24 hours without seeing somebody, it makes me depressed. It makes me incredibly sad. It makes me feel so lonely. And I've so come to enjoy this feeling of alonement, as you put it so beautifully, and being alone, that it's even the difference. For example, today's a day where I'm sort of in a day between classes. And so I'm going to spend a lot of today working at my computer, and I'm speaking with you, of course, which is a wonderful way to start the day. But then at the end of the day, I've already scheduled to go to a yoga class, because I know even if it's not like a social obligation, just having something where I'm getting out of the house and I'm just in a room with other people makes such a huge difference. But also, I mean, the biggest difference is really learning, and this just came with time, like learning how to genuinely enjoy my time with myself, which I am so protective of now. It was something that I hated before. And now I love being on my own.
I think it's funny. I also use yoga in pretty much exactly the same way. It's my little social fix at the end of the day. And it makes me think of, I was reading about something earlier today, actually, called the Goldilocks effect, which it was sort of coined by a researcher called Sherry Turkle. And the Goldilocks effect, as it applies to time alone, is that we need this ideal balance of social and solo connection. And it does differ for everyone. You know, some people come on this podcast and they'll say to me, you know, it's a few days. Most people will say between a day and 2 days. You know, that does seem to be the norm. I think I'm similar to you. It is about a day. I need something. And I think that again, just confronting that nuance, because otherwise it tips away from alonement. And that's, you know, a big tragedy for me, because I think that it's such an important thing to be able to value.
Mm-hmm. Completely. And I adore Sherry Turkle. So I'm so glad that you're reading her and that you're sort of bringing her into this conversation. But I also want to mention the other thing with yoga that I really learned is going to it in the evening, because I used to go all the time to classes in the morning, almost thinking of like, oh, I'm going to, you know, start my day and work out, sort of get this part over with and then shower and go about my day. But for me, even recognizing at night, I feel really lonely. And this is something that, like, I've learned now how to enjoy that time, but it's far more difficult for me to enjoy evenings than to enjoy mornings. I mean, my newsletter is morning person. And so even, you know, tonight I'm going to a yoga class from 5:30 to 6:30. And so that's much more reasonable to me to have this evening of like 7 p.m. on, instead of it being like 5 p.m. on. It's just this like open abyss. And that's where I get a little bit nervous and sort of feel like, okay, I need to see somebody or do something.
I remember talking to someone about this, and they said that, I think I was actually, to your TV point that you expressed earlier, I think I said to them, you know, that I didn't tend to watch TV in the evenings. And they're like, well, what do you do? What do you do after dinner? And it was interesting to me, because I wonder, maybe that was their sort of, you know, crutch for, you know, for using that time. And I think, I mean, you know, yoga sounds like such a wholesome way of doing it. And I think it's good to just also, I guess there's the Goldilocks effect, there's the sort of amount, but I guess what you're identifying here is the almost like the trigger times in the day of loneliness. And that can be, I guess, you know, that can be different for everyone, but I think that's really brilliant that you've acknowledged that about the evening as well. And that's the time when you can feel loneliness, and that's the way you've taken those practical steps to counteract that with something so wholesome and wonderful.
Yeah. And I mean, even going back to what you were saying, using things as a crutch, I mean, my first several months of living alone, I hated the evening so much. It was just something to get through. And so I was taking a lot of weed gummies, which are legal in Portland, but I was taking weed and I was watching TV because I was like, I just want to get through this evening. Like, I truly was like, I just want to numb out and to zoom past this evening. And then I would feel like I'm wasting so much time doing that, and it didn't feel good. And so you know, I would do that probably like four nights a week. And I was like, I want to cut this back. And so I started cutting it back, and now I never do. And I feel like what I love about yoga is that it's such a practice of embodiment and touching base with myself. So I'd also try to use the class in the evening as an opportunity to sort of check in and to think about, like, what do I need from this evening? What are the emotions that I'm feeling? Am I feeling anxiety? Am I feeling boredom? How do I want to address that this evening? And really, like, sink into that in a way that's healing instead of a way that's a crutch to just sort of like zoom past this and entertain my way through this night.
That's so inspiring. Thank you for sharing the mentality behind that. I also wanted to ask you about cooking, because you have this background, as we mentioned earlier, as a food writer and editor. And you write, you know, you've written about cooking solo and sort of learning to, I don't know, almost like, you know, create a fridge, create a pantry solo. What are your biggest learnings so far about cooking for one?
I mean, the biggest thing is that I always make too much food, which is the biggest mistake that I make, because I have no idea how to cook for one person. So I'll follow a recipe for a pot of soup and then realize, like, oh my God, I've made myself dinner for eight nights in a row by accident when I really only wanted dinner for two nights in a row. So a lot of that honestly comes down to freezing food. I've gotten really good at figuring out how to make sort of individualized portions in my freezer so that I can take those out on nights when I'm not cooking or when I need a quick lunch. But again, it's one of those things of trial and error. I will also say that one of the things that I learned is how much I enjoy the act of cooking. Now that I'm living alone, I feel like living with a partner, it was so much more about like getting through making a weeknight meal to be able to spend time together and eat it together and like have that communal aspect. And now the cooking is just as much part of the enjoyment as the eating it is. I'll sometimes put on a podcast when I do it. I'll sometimes just listen to music. I'll often follow a recipe I've never done before, or I'll invent one and just sort of go off of what I have. But like leaning into the enjoyment of not just the eating of the dinner, but like really like cooking and creating it. And also it's this ultimate way of taking care of myself. I feel like there was a time early on in my separation where I really lost that joy of cooking because I just didn't really know how to do it for myself. And I wasn't feeding myself properly. I was sort of just like making really simple dinners, or I had just really lost that connection to food. And I feel like finding it and really understanding, like, what am I craving? What do I want to feed myself with? Is just such an act of self-love that I really try to protect now and sort of curate in my life.
That's so nice to see it as that self-care. I also heard you mention, so creating a new recipe or sort of experimentation. Now, that is easier when you're cooking for one, right? Or when you're cooking alone, because you're not worried about the guests that you may potentially disappoint.
Oh my gosh, completely. And there have been so many happy accidents. I mean, earlier this week, and that's the other thing that I've constantly, I feel like maybe I'm more inventive with recipes because I always have leftovers of things in weird amounts. You know, like I made a half recipe for coconut chickpea stew. And so then I was like, well, I have half a can of coconut milk. Like, what do I do with this? And so the other night I was just sauteing some kale, and I was like, I wonder, you know, I'll just pour this into the can and see how it evaporates and how it is. And it was so delicious. Like, it was just the easiest thing in the whole world. I just like poured some coconut milk over my kale and it was fabulous. And I'm definitely not inventing something, but it was just a thought that had never occurred to me before. So I feel like there's more of a playfulness because of the weird amounts of leftovers that I have and the ways that I need to utilize them and keep using them.
Oh, that's both. That both sounds absolutely delicious and is testament to your talent as well for playing around with food. I always love seeing what you've made and what you've created. And I think it's super, super inspiring to look at the recipes you come up with. And also, there was an idea that you shared a while ago, I think, where you said you would make one sauce base for the week and then sort of experiment with it in different ways. I think you said that you made a, was it a churma?
I know, I'm trying to think, is that chamula?
Chamula, that was it.
Okay. But yeah, that's another thing that I'll often do where I'll make like a huge sauce of something. I mean, all summer I was cooking different types of pestos because I really like to use the greens of vegetables to make different types of pestos. And I say pesto so loosely because I'm, you know, completely going off the rails. I'm doing like carrot tops with pistachios and whatever cheese I happen to have in my fridge at the time. But I'll make a huge batch and then that just sort of lives in my fridge, or I'll make sort of, you know, like an almond butter and soy sauce sort of sauce. But yeah, I love doing that. And I think that that's such a good way, especially when I have a really packed week, of making sure that I'm creating recipes that I really love that are super delicious. So with a pesto, maybe I'll put that on top of a slice of seed bread, or I'll add it on top of soup, or I'll put it on my eggs. And you can kind of make this base sauce and then apply it to so many different things throughout the week to make sure that, like, yeah, that I'm feeding myself and that I have delicious food on hand all the time.
I love finding leftovers sometimes in the fridge. And it's almost, obviously, when you live alone, you're cooking for yourself quite a lot. But especially if you've made them, I don't know, a couple of days ago or whatever, it's almost like a gift from past you to future you. It almost feels like another person is involved. And you're like, oh, clever me, like 2 days ago with that pesto.
Completely, completely. Yes, exactly. And it's kind of nice knowing, like, oh, I don't have anybody else who's like eating the food in my fridge, so I know that it's there.
Who's stolen that beautiful pesto you've made. And I don't want to miss. I definitely want to get on to speaking about your incredible sounding debut novel that we were speaking about just before we got on air. You're Safe Here is the title, and it's a futuristic thriller which centers around something called a well pod, which is, and I quote from the press release, a floating personal paradise in the Pacific Ocean focused entirely on health, solitude and relaxation. We've got a while to go, I know, before it comes out. I know it's June 2024, I think, when it's coming out. But I'd love to hear what inspired you to dream up that solitude-themed idea.
Well, you know, and it's so interesting, even reading drafts, because I wrote it, I started writing it around 4 or 5 years ago, which is bizarre that I was kind of dreaming of this floating solitude pod while I was in a marriage. And so there are so many ways that you could probably psychoanalyze that and go into that and go like, okay, maybe I was craving this sense of solitude. And I think, you know, I wrote it at this time where I was really stressed out from work and I was just being sort of pulled at all ends. And it was this fantasy of, you know, what if there was this floating pod? And so the concept of my book and where it started was this vision of this woman on this floating wellness retreat in the middle of the Pacific Ocean. And it's this floating pod that's only large enough to hold her. And she is an AI therapist. And the story alternates between her perspective in this place of solitude and the reasons that she felt like she needed to go to this place to answer these huge questions in her life. And then also looking at the founder of this company and why she created this. And then this woman who's on the pods, her partner who works for the company. And it's the ways that all of their motivations and their relationships all intersect. But it's very much a book that's sort of about finding solitude and listening to your own voice. But it's set in the future. It's set in 2060. And yes, as you said, it's available for pre-order now, but it doesn't come out until June of 2024. But I'm very excited.
Wow. There's so much to unpack there. I think that, I mean, I will, I suppose, leave it to your therapist perhaps to look back into the origins of an idea.
It's so bizarre because I swear, Francesca, I was editing, I was going through the major edits of the book and I was getting my book deal literally as I was going through my separation. Like, I got my agent, I went through my separation, I went through all these rounds of edits, and then I found my book publisher. And I was rereading paragraphs that I was like, did I write this just about my main? It was through my main character, Maggie, her perspective, but she's just craving this time alone and to herself. And it's just such a strong through line of her own desire where it was bizarre reading it. I was like, okay, well, part of me must have really needed some sort of a separation. And really felt this desire to find myself instead of getting to know myself within the context of a relationship.
This is perhaps a tricky question, but I suspect that desire for solitude, for sort of, you know, getting back to oneself. That's something that can happen. I don't know. I experience that probably every few months when I realize I've disconnected and need to get back to sort of journaling or whatever. I need to sort of come back to myself. It is harder in a relationship. If you were to be in that situation again, but you knew it was a relationship that you sort of wanted to continue with, and you just sort of needed to have that time to yourself, that sort of mental freedom, what do you think you would pursue now? Like, knowing what you do now and knowing how you can get those moments of sort of solitude and self-knowledge?
This is such a beautiful and important question, because it's so true, right? Like, you don't have to separate from a partnership to be able to get that solitude. And that was something that I don't think that I fully understood. And I think, you know, so much of it goes back to, and I could spend all day sort of unpacking and understanding what happened and what led to our divorce. But it was the nature of our relationship that I felt like I couldn't get that. And I don't know if it's because we were just so enmeshed in each other's lives from really going from teenagers into adults together. But one of the things that I've been experiencing recently, because I've started dating someone and it's developing into a more serious relationship, and part of me is like, is really freaked out about that, because I feel like, oh, I've just started to get to know myself and I have this relationship with myself. I don't want to lose this in another person. He feels the same way. And so I feel like there's this new intentionality, and it's come down to so much open communication and talking about it and really being intentional around how much time we spend together and what our lives look like, and that we don't have to have all the same interests and we don't have to do every single thing together. That so much of the strength that I'm finding in this, you know, still new relationship is in each of our appreciation for solitude that then brings together a stronger partnership. And so I'm still in the midst of figuring this out, but I do understand that it's possible, because I don't want to be a hermit for the rest of my life, but I do want to still maintain this feeling of being on my own and this beauty that I've found in my relationship with myself.
I always think that's almost the gold standard. I mean, look, relationships don't by default make you happier. We all know that. But the best ones, they can, I don't know, I think that they can sort of add that little something to every day, you know, whether that's a very close, you know, friendship, whether that's a family relationship, or whether that's a romantic relationship. But being able to have that solitude, that appreciation for alonement in your relationship is, it's having your cake and eating it, I think. And it sounds like that's been built in as a value into this budding relationship that you're in.
Completely. And, you know, it's so different, because when I was dating my ex, like, we never even had the experience of having two separate homes. We always had the same home. Coming into this adult relationship, and also I think dating in, you know, I'm in my 30s and my new partner, he's in his 30s. And also it's taken me such a long time to even say partner, because I feel like I've been so averse to being with somebody that I'm sort of like, this is this person that I'm like kind of seeing and whatever. But it is developing into a partnership, and I'm recognizing that I can say that without losing the self of the sense of my own self. But I think that there's something really different about dating as two adults. Like, he's had this whole life and history and background that's very different from mine. I've had this whole life and history, and so it feels more natural to bring this sense of alonement and this respect for solitude into the relationship.
To close this episode, I wanted to ask, you've had this incredible sort of 18 months, I think, of getting to know yourself in this whole new way that's been so fulfilling, I think, and such a journey from coming out of that 10-year relationship to going through all these changes alone. What's your ultimate alonement right now?
I think of alonement in two different areas. One is in movement and one is in stillness, because I think that exercise and getting in tune to my body is so important to me. And so, you know, after we're finished recording, I'm planning on going for a long run without any headphones, just to be able to sort of like listen to my own thoughts and spend that time with myself. I'll be running with my dog, so I'll be with him. But I think that there's this like feeling of, you know, going for walks and runs without any music or any distractions, but also I've so enjoyed now. I almost in the evenings. So we sort of talked about this alternative to this numbing out in the evenings. What I do now is I really create this like very intentional nest around me. I have this, as we mentioned, to bring it full circle, this enormous couch. So it's an L couch, and I just sit in the corner of it, and I have novels and books and my journal and things that I'm interested in and curious about. And I just sort of let myself explore that curiosity and journal if I feel moved to and read whatever I want to. And so, and even just this like maintenance of that time. So I do that every evening, no matter what. But yeah, it's just this sort of intentionality of like being with myself and allowing myself to be with myself that feels completely new.
That's so special. And I think reading Morning Person and knowing how many wonderful curated sort of, you know, book guides and articles and things that you include in there, it's amazing knowing that this all comes from this nest of solitude in the evenings.
Totally. That's where most of my recommendations come from. Yeah. And so if I'm watching a TV show or something, but it really is this like creating space for curiosity and exploration and just sort of, yeah. But it's as opposed, it's so interesting because it can look like just sort of sitting and vegging and watching TV, but it feels so much more intentional, just, I guess, the way that I relate to it. And so that's another part of it, that externally something might look exactly the same, but internally, my experience with it is completely different.
This was one of those episodes which I'm going to be thinking about for a while. Leslie's lifestyle is exactly the kind of thing I envisaged when I started Alone Month, and she's such an inspiration for anyone embarking upon a similar journey. You can keep up with her Substack at morningpersonnewsletter.com. Well, I, as ever, am on francescaspector.substack.com. This season of Alone Month was edited by Pineapple Audio Production. Thanks for listening.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Kayla Itzinas.
I'm Kayla Itzinas, and I have been training a global community of women since 2009. I've created a brand new podcast, Sweat Daily, to help you level up your life and reach your health and well-being goals. From fitness tips to food that fuels you, meditation to motivation, we've got you covered. Sweat Daily, the happiest, healthiest, and most confident version of you awaits. Available on Apple Podcasts and wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.